Good evening, people in Palmer and Sutton and the surrounding areas. This is Greg Gussie, and we have another eclectic and wonderful show for you this evening. Canned music tonight, but it's going to be Rhianna Giddens, who's going to be playing at the Glenn Massey Theater, our brand new theater here in the Valley. It should be pretty exciting. And we have a lot of things going on this weekend, too. This is Independent Booksellers Weekend, and in a few minutes we'll have Katie here talk a little bit about it. And we have Miggy Abbey here, who's going to talk a little bit about the things that she's doing. Miggy Abbey is a percussionist in the Valley and has a studio here just down the street, and we'll let her do her own thing.
Okay, so thank you very much for letting me come on and talk to you guys tonight. Just to tie into the May 2nd event, I will also be playing as part of that, too. David asked me to come and play the marimba, so I will be playing at that, and Katie will tell you more about that, but that there'll be some marimba music to start the night while people are coming in and while people are eating a little bit before Heather will do her talk. I also just wanted to share a couple other events that are coming up for drumming and percussion. My business is called Percussion in the Valley, and I service all different ages and ability levels. On May 9th, I'll showcase all of my students who want to be performing. It's a free concert. It's at the Protestant Presbyterian Church in Palmer, and it's at 3 o'clock on Saturday, May 9th. And you will be able to hear all different types of percussionists, all different styles of drumming and marimba, adults to students, everything in between. May 16th, there is a African drumming and dance class that will be taught by me and Miranda Harris. That's a beginning level class for adults and high school students. Anybody who wants to try drumming and dancing, and you don't have to have any experience, it's from 2 to 4 p.m. on that day, and you do need to register in advance. The couple days after that, the same week, May 19th, there will be an open drum jam at Arcos Brewery. This is also a free event. It's open to anybody who wants to try out drumming. The drums will all be supplied. You can bring your own drum if you want, but it's open to everybody, all ages, from kids to adults, anybody who wants to try out drumming and just play with other people. And then finally, in May, there is a deadline for the percussion camp that we teach the first week of June, and that's for kids who are age 7 to 18. So if you're interested in signing up for that, the deadline is May 25th. So those are all of the percussion coming up events. If you're curious about any of that, you can go to my website, www.percussioninthevalley.com, or give me a call at 631-8079.
Well, thank you, Miggy. A lot of you folks out there might not think it, but percussion and drumming are both art forms, very serious art forms that go back thousands of years. Hopefully someday we'll have Miggy on and she can fill in those gaps, but it's still a good thing to do. It makes you feel good when you hit a drum.
And on the side note, Greg has actually taken a drumming class that we offered at the Senior Center in January, and he got to show some of his drumming chops, and he did awesome.
All right, there you go. Awesome at almost anything. That's me. Thank you, Miggy.
Thank you.
Okay, and now, as we continue on with our What's Happening, we have Katie here from next door from the famous Fireside Books. And Katie's going to tell us a little bit about their Saturday activities. Saturday is Independent Bookstore Day. Or booksellers? Is it booksellers or bookstores?
I think the official title is bookstore.
Bookstores.
Yeah.
So, and as said, next door is one of Alaska's best, in my opinion, bookstores that you could possibly have. So, Katie, tell us a little bit about Saturday's activities.
Thank you. We have a lot of events going on. I think mainly it's just an opportunity for us and our customers to celebrate independent bookstores and the fact that we have an awesome one ourselves. We're going to start off with some children's activities, art projects and story time at 10 and 11, and then we're going to have some live music. We're going to have a panel discussion about relationship advice, which should be fun, with Jackie Ivey and Timothy Bateson and a couple other local authors.
Now, I think you should delve into that a little bit more. We're going to have writers giving advice on relationships.
Yes.
And there are two very curious things about that. First of all, as far as I know, writers know nothing about personal, interpersonal relationships. They all have usually horrible marriages. Oh, okay. That's a myth that's been well expanded.
I think what it is they may lack some personal social skills, but I think that a lot of writers have very in-depth insight into relationships and stuff.
Well, they
personally contrive, I feel that.
They contrive relationships. That's, they write about things that they've made up. Okay, so I'm sorry to interrupt.
No,
go ahead.
I think it's meant to be just kind of a fun discussion because the characters that are involved, that the writers are characters, they're hilarious. I think it's just going to be a fun discussion. And the questions that we have are mostly comical. So I think it's just, it'll be a fun thing. And then we've got our wonderful Eowyn Ivy is going to be here, I believe, at 3 o'clock. And she's going to be just discussing, you know, all sorts of things, anything related to publishing and writing. And it's just going to be kind of an open dialogue between her and a couple of other authors also. So, and then we're going to have a signing with Heather Lendy, which is amazing. She's wonderful. And then we're going to have a dinner at Turkey Red afterwards with her as well.
Now, the dinner, though, is sold out.
It is, yeah.
So, well, that sounds like a pretty wonderful day for you. Or you have to work on Saturday?
Of course.
Of course. That
wouldn't miss it.
David Chisamisa, slave driver. So, well, folks, there's some of those things that are going on. Now, we're going to now play a piece by Rhiannon Giddens, who's fairly extremely famous singer, who said is going to be performing at the Glenn Massey Theater. I believe she has tickets available. And
we are selling those at Fireside as
well. Oh, you're selling them at Fireside too?
Yeah.
Well, this is another great Whistling Swan piece, and we all should go out of our way to thank Mike for the work he's done these many, many years to provide us with talent. That's it. That's the right word. Provide us with talent for our pleasure. So I'm going to let Katie go. We're going to play that
Thank
piece.
You.
Now, you folks don't go anywhere because we have an important reading of a piece by Ruth. Ruth Moore, is that her? Did I get that right? Yes. And then we have Kelly Coulson here, who's going to knock your socks off with her wit and brilliance. You want to play that?
If I die in the German war, I want you to send my body, send it to my mother-in-law. If I get killed, if I get killed, please don't bury my soul. Just leave me out, let the buzzards eat me whole. When you see me across the rich man's feet. If I don't bring you flour, I'll bring you bolted meat. I went to the depot. I looked up at the stars, cried, some train don't come. Some walking done. Well, my mama, she told me just before she died, Lord, my precious daughter, don't you be so wise. You know it's deep and wide. I can stand right here, see my babe from the other side. What you do to me, baby, it never gets out of me. I may not see you after cross the deep blue sea.
Thank you. And now, a special guest here, Ruth Moore, who has a piece to read for us. Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself first, Ruth?
I've lived in Alaska for a very long time, but I've enjoyed living in Alaska, and I love writing about it. I've written a lot of poetry as of late about it, and when I went to college, I wrote a, I went to UAA, well, actually I went to, it was called ACC back then, at Alaska Community College, and I wrote an English 111 paper, and the teacher said, oh, you should get this published, and I don't know if she was going to turn in a lot of things, and I don't know if she turned it in and got it actually published or not, but I did rework it, and in the senior center had a poetry session, writing stories and poetry, and writing about your life through poetry. And I thought, well, I'll write this and see what happens. And so I wrote it, and I got it published in The Frontiersman on March 15th of this year. And I thought I would read it tonight.
Oh, thank you. Before you get to that, I should mention that April has been Poetry Month, mm-hmm. and we've had two wonderful women from the University of Alaska who have been doing training, I guess, in how to write your story, whether poetically or as a short story or essay. And I even had the privilege of reading poetry with them here just the other day, which is how I ran into Ruth, who's also, on top of that, one of our outstanding senior citizens here in town. She's not a young chicken anymore, but that doesn't hurt. So, Ruth, go ahead. Give it to us.
Okay. This is called The Real Winner. The sun glinted off the compacted snow, causing me to squint my eyes to narrow slits. It was mid-January, and the eager gathering of people was headed in a single definite direction. I could feel the cold steel through my heavy-duty jeans and long johns as the crowd pushed me against the frost-covered chain-link fence. I leaned over the icy cold wire and strained to see the reason for the crowd's excitement. The pressing spectators shouted and screamed as though gladiators had been turned loose on a strip of snow-packed trail no wider than 4 feet. A sudden hush fell over the crowd. Excited barking of dogs could be heard in the distance. A harsh blast of a bullhorn signaled go, and simultaneously the crowd came alive, yelling, screaming, and jumping up and down in their excitement. I leaned even further across the fence, watching as furry blurs, 8 and 10 at a time, went charging past. Wooden runners made an almost silent swishing sound as they silently sliced through the snow against the icy ground. I heard the commanding shouts of a musher as he clung tightly to the back of his sled. As this last team pulled in front of me, I could feel a sudden kinship with a lead dog. He strained proudly against his harness and at the same time kept the other dogs in pace and headed in the right direction. It seemed as though hard work was the only life he knew, his paws digging into the snow and his sleek body strained against the harness would earn him his keep for another day. His heart pounding with excitement at the task before him, it appeared he was ready to give his all. Suddenly, I realized the team was no longer in front of me, but was fast fading in the distance. My heart began to beat faster, and a feeling of pride swelled in my chest, forcing a lump into my throat. I felt a soaring sense of freedom as I realized the lead dog and I, had a mutual attitude toward life. Although, sadly, though, I knew I would not be able to express this feeling to anyone else in the crowd of people. I brushed away the tears of fierce pride and pretended they were just a result of the cold. I turned up my collar, my neck, and my ears, appreciating the newfound warmth, and waited in the milling crowd. My thoughts became my own, and I thanked my Creator for letting me live in such a unique place. Excitement stirred the crowd into action again, and I heard children shouting, "Here they come!" I was too embarrassed to let my emotions show, so I stood in quiet awe as the furry servants of man in all of his pursuits, earnest labor or sheer pleasure, returned. Their tongues were hanging out, and white foamy saliva was frozen to their furs. Their sides were heaving as they labored for breath, and the swishing of the runners was not as fast as before as they reached the finish line. I walked over to greet the champion team. Their tails drooped as they dug at the snow, licking at it to satisfy their thirst. One by one, they fell to the frozen earth, quivering from exhaustion, while their mushers checked the pads of their paws and dutifully patted each one. Some managed to move their heads, but most responded with a simple thump of their tail to the ground. The smell of the wet fur filled the air, while the crowd excited chatter gradually drowned out the sound of the panting dogs. The blue ribbon went to the winning musher, but even as he received the award, the lead dog lifted his head momentarily, and my eyes met his. "You and I know who the real winner is, don't we, old friend?" I thought, as a mutual understanding seemed to pass between us. As I turned to leave, I glanced at the tired dogs to the snow-covered mountains only a few miles away. Taking a deep, contented breath, I started to walk at a brisk pace, singing to an old sourdough like me. I knew at that moment I was really a part of this magical wilderness called Alaska.
Well, that's an Alaskan story, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Very nice. Almost prose poetry, which I'm going to get to here in a little bit. Thank you so much, Ruth. And if you write more, Come on back.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you letting me do this.
Well,
really
it's
do.
All part of Art in the Valley, and Art in the Valley has no race, no gender, no age. It's art.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you.
Want to play another clip? Back to Rhianna Giddens, please. Okay, folks, we have Kelly Coulson with us, and I'm pretty excited. But before I get to Kelly Coulson, I'm going to read a prose poem of my own, which has something to do with Kelly Coulson, and goes back years and whatever. This poem I wrote a long, long time ago, and hopefully I can make my little phone thing works. It's called Renewed Dream. I am blessed in the knowledge of how it is. Through the course of time, there are many paths that could have been traveled, and you hear, what if I had done such and such? Where would I be today? I am granted by dream continued views of these other dimensions, the paths not taken. In one, I am a silly person high in the Truchas near a clear mountain lake. Spring is in bloom, and the snow still sits on the peaks, not far above me. Lavender little flowers highlight a meadow of grass just tall enough to shine silver in the warm breeze. The sky is that particular blue that only exists at treeline, and the few clouds are pure. I get off my horse, a great Andalusian stallion with pink mane and tail and green eyes. He only responds to a sung Spanish, which miraculously I've learned. I bend over to cup some water from the brook that flows from the lake to oceans I've never seen. I see my reflection, a gaunt old man who never grew the city pouch. My skin is leathery from love of the weather, with enormous crow's feet from worshiping the sun. My hair is white and rust, bleached from our star, tied with a leather thong with beads of amber. It's never been cut and hangs far below my butt. I also sport a mustache of monstrous size, a braided Fu Manchu trimmed at my chest with tiny turquoises and porcupine quill. An eagle claw earring warms the spirits. I rest myself on a rounded gray boulder and straighten my right leg with my boot heel on another small piedra. Behind me is a chunk of Jemez lava with mysterious petroglyphs I can't decipher, but know what they mean. My horse grazes calmly with reins down. The sun finds the remaining bright steel on my rusted spur and glints a giggle. My boot is wrapped in duct tape, holding hide and sole together. It is warm in the sun, and I take off my battered hat. I take out my tobacco and begin to roll a cigarette. Just as I'm about to tongue the glue, a black mare with three white stockings and a star blaze runs out from the aspens. She stops and sees me. At a gentle trot, she comes towards me. She dismounts with a soft hop. I look at her and the bare horse, except the braided rawhide bosal and its tender ropes. She looks at me and answers without words. This mare won't take to the bit. I take her extended hand and rise. We walk to the lake and bathe in its snow-melt water. Young trout shimmer in the light. A surrealistic day of stars. We scrub each other with sand and gravel, then heat each other on the sun-warm grass perfumed by the wild flowers. I laugh and she cries. It must sound like coyotes to the elk. She looks down, eyes alight, in one tear track, a Mardi Gras marking on her soft cheek. I lay taking in the radiance. She turns away and dresses, facing the aspen. I want to see her face. She mounts the mare without turning and rides back into the forest. I dress and resume my pose, taking up the cigarette and lighting it with a kitchen match. The sulfur smell is familiar and pleasant. I smile and think, what a wondrous gift, a broken heart. So, station break.
Radio Free Palmer, we are listener and member supported. You can make a difference. Join today at RadioFreePalmer.org.
So I first ran into Kelly Coulson, who was painting envelopes. Very interesting and wondrous thing. I hope someday she gets back to it. She has a long history, which I'll let her tell us about. But one day she sent me an envelope, which still resides on my desk, that was this story, and that's meant a great deal to me. So with that, tell us about yourself, Kelly.
I really don't know where to begin.
Well, why don't we begin with you and something that's a commonality here with artists. Everyone went to Service High School.
Yes,
Bev Stevens. She was probably the teacher to many of us. She was mine.
Well, and we have a phone call. So tell us about Bev Stevens and how that led to your art.
Well, she really didn't talk to me a lot because she didn't think I was very good. But I really liked her, and I loved her class. I took watercolors with her and just several other classes. And what I learned about it was she would tell me she wasn't crazy about my work, but she would always tell me, well, just have fun doing it. And I knew it was an insult, but it was like, what the heck? I'm having fun. I knew that my parents were taking my artwork seriously because I got a 3.8 one semester, and they bought me $250 worth of Aquarelle brushes, which back in the 80s wasn't a lot of brushes, but they were very high quality, and there was just a difference in painting with them. And watercolor was never my thing, but I still have those brushes. In fact, I had a house fire about 5 years ago, and when the investigator came over to me and said, well, you know, do you want to go in and see what you have? And the first thing I wanted to do was go look for the brushes. And he was saying, what about jewelry? I was like, I don't care. I just want my brushes. And that was something that was very important to me.
Excellent. You know, it said a lot of the local artists went to Service High. Rose Hendrickson, for instance, must be something about the south side of Anchorage that has brought us to that. And now you were raised, your father had horses, I believe?
Yes, he had American Saddlebreds.
I see. But you don't paint horses.
No, I don't. They don't stand still long enough.
There you go. Well, then that takes us to another thing. I have seen a theme in some of your work, which has a lot to do with the Russian and Eastern Orthodox Church.
Yes.
You want to...
Oh, before I got married to my current husband, I was looking into Judaism, and he was a devout Baptist. And I didn't want to become Baptist, and so we started looking at other churches, and we found Orthodoxy. And we would wind up converting together with our family. And that was good and everything. I don't go anymore because I've got allergies, and their incense makes me really sick. So.
But is a theme in your art.
Yes. It's, to go into one of their churches is a sensual experience. There's fabric, there's beautiful icons, there's texture, and I take that into a lot of my work.
That must be, yeah, I've seen a lot of sensuality in your work, and especially another theme I see is a lot is mother and child themes. In fact, I've often commented to you that certainly on your envelopes, I don't know about on your eggs, but, and I should mention that Kelly paints eggs, and is one of the instructors at the Makatans Festival coming up, which is pretty exciting. And I should also mention that Kelly has some eggs over at the Palmer Museum of History in their extravaganza piece. So mother and child, yes, which always seem to remind me of you and your youngest, Tia.
Yes.
Which is pretty fascinating, and you seem to have brought that on. So tell us a little bit about your eggs over at the museum.
Well, when I was getting ready for this, one of my children dropped a tray of eggs that were recently decorated, and that was probably my greatest accomplishment, was that they all broke, and so they didn't get to the museum. But I also didn't scream or yell or get angry. I was like, they're just things. It's all right. I cried later, but I didn't get angry at the kids. It was an innocent mistake, so I was really happy with myself for that. But the eggs that I've done that are there, all of them are, I don't have a particular theme. I was just doing random things, whatever was striking my fancy at the time.
Now, what makes or drives one to paint on eggs? And I noticed you called it decoration, but what I've seen is actually painting.
Right.
You want to...
Oh, gosh, well, it is painting. What drives me to doing it, because they're there. I have a lot of friends who raise chickens, and I ask them to give me the oddest shaped eggs that they have. And they do get some odd shapes. They aren't all the same shape or size or anything like that. And sometimes I'll have an image in my head for a while, and I'll see an egg, and I'll go, this is the one. And I've heard of artists like sculptors saying that they don't, how is it? You know the phrase, you know the quote, you told it to me once. It's not that they create something with a sculpture, they release something.
That's
you know the
way of putting it, yes.
Okay, well, sometimes I'll have an image in my head and then I'll see the egg. It's like, this egg was meant to have this. And I know it sounds crazy, but I'm an artist and I'm crazy.
We've noticed that. Though I don't know if it's clinical. The question, I don't know if I have a question. Oh, I know what it is. It's back to envelopes and eggs, and I've seen some of your knitting work, and I believe the term I had used was that you like to paint the outsides of containers.
Yes.
Of course, painting the outside of containers is another one of those things that goes back to the beginning of human history. You know, all those Sumerian jars and the jars that the Greeks would plow the waters with were all labeled and painted to determine the place of origin, which is an interesting thing. It's kind of like those giant container ships that we see today with their big connexes that are painted yellow or orange and bear some emblazoned symbol of whatever. That the message is not inside the jar. That's commodity. The message is on the outside.
I'm working on an envelope right now. I have a son who's at the Alaska Military Youth Academy, and I was thinking about this very theme last night, and I got up today and I have started drawing tarot cards. Is it tarot? Tarot? Tarot. Okay. I looked up some loose meanings, and I'm actually creating this collage on the outside of an envelope for him. And, of course, my husband's more religious, and he almost had a heart attack when he saw it. And, oh, well. But I think that my son is going to love it.
Excellent.
Because you can infer meanings from it. I'm not going to remember the meanings when he gets it and asks me what it means, but it'll be fun.
He can go find a gypsy.
Right.
There you go. I bet you they have a few of them near the base. I always saw palm readers and gypsies near military bases. So. Excellent. What's next? What's next in your bunch of tricks?
Well, for the past semester, I've been taking two art classes at the college, and I've discovered that it is, when I say it's hard, I don't want to whine the word hard, but there's a lot going on in my life. And having two art classes on top of it was just, I was producing and I was having fun, but I was also exhausted. This summer, I'm going to take the skills that I learned in my art classes and just enjoy myself and work with it, you know, and just without the pressure of having a grade coming up. And I'm going to go back to the envelopes, and there's some designs I'm working on with my knitting as well. So a hat's a container, right? A hat's a container for the head?
A hat's a container for the head.
I've dreamt about designs for hats, and so I think I might be doing something with hats.
Yeah. In fact, the term helmet is a German thing for, of course, you know, a hat. And it's the idea of putting your head in a mitt. And of course, I like Lederhosen better, but... there you go. My German's not very good.
Do you wear Lederhosen, Gregory? Do you have some?
No, but I have chaps.
Well, and a crop. Goody.
There you go. Yeah, that's back to those cowboy days again. So, okay, I think we're going to take a few minute break here. We'll listen to a little more Miss Giddens and... then we'll get back to Kelly, and maybe I'll even read another poem. Hello. So we're back with Kelly, and I think I'm going to read another poem just for the heck of it, because I can do that. This one is about photography, and then we're going to get into Kelly's knitting, her very large family, and a couple other things of that nature. So this one is called Pictures. You and me taking pictures on a sunny day. Ain't this fun? Ain't this a child's play? Your eyes glowing from a yellow star ray, captured by glass and quietly put away. My heart's yours with no delay. You and me looking at pictures from a sunny day. Laughed so hard, spewed my coffee all over the place. There you're acting silly, acting just like it's okay. Love's in the air, no embarrassment, not a trace. Hand in hand, heart to heart, this way. All alone at the end of a sunny day, peering into pictures from just yesterday. Who decided who gets to go and who has to stay? Looking ain't fun, but I have to anyway. Misery loves company, but you've gone away. Thank you. Thank you. Very nice.
Bravissimo.
Yeah. So we've been talking to Kelly about her art. She's and I think this is part of her art. I think I mentioned that a lot of her work shows her and her youngest daughter. But she has a funny story about her. The term she used was enormous family, but it's rather populated family. Go ahead, Kelly.
All right. Well, I was expecting my last child, and my mother, at the time, I was very defensive because people would see me places and they would just ask me outright, you know, if I knew about birth control and things like that. But my kids were great, and as far as I remember. But my mother one day asked me, why do you keep having kids? And I said, I just don't feel like I'm done. And my mom started laughing. She was 65 at the time. And she said, that's biology. She said, why do you think I live on a ranch where I'm having animals every year and baby animals? And so I was like, oh, my gosh. And my mother was sitting there cackling. But I decided that it was probably time to be done. That's how I figured it out. I just always had this expectation. I didn't realize that it was, you know, how the body works, at least for me. So it was funny.
There you go.
Anyway. But I wouldn't send any of them back.
No, the children you have, I've met, are very, very nice, nice human beings. I've also met your mother, and I can't see her cackling. But there you go. It's, you know, everyone has to embellish their stories. But you didn't tell our audience, how many kids have you got?
Oh, I have 9.
9. That is a lot for this day and age.
Yes.
Yeah, I think, unless you live on a farm. You don't just paint. You also, as I said, knit. You're involved in some
knitting,
forms of fiber art.
Fiber art was something that I tried to avoid for the longest time. When I was in college the first time, back when I was like 19 and 20, I, for whatever reason, I just didn't like the fiber artists. I thought they were a little weird even for my taste. But I got pulled into knitting a few years ago, and I've become obsessed with it. I probably have more yarn than food in my house, but I've also gone into spinning. But my biggest thing right now is writing. And I've started to write about knitting. And I've got the story going right now about a story shawl where I have a woman who's dying and she wants her story to be passed on to her daughter. And she has her friends create pieces and they tell stories along with it to explain how their mother helped them become better people or how she enhanced their lives.
So all your work seems to be storytelling of a sort, whether it's painting eggs, anyone goes over to the museum and sees Kelly's work, you'll see that they're all little stories. Pretty interesting. So,
one of the first articles that I read by you, you talked about all art being performance art.
That is a stance I hold to.
Well, it's true. And the first time I read that, I don't know why, and I don't know why I would try to critique anything that you would say. But I thought, well, that's not true. That's, you know, but I've since realized that everything that we do, if it's meant to be seen by an audience, even if we're not there for it, if we have created it, it becomes a performance. And it elicits a response.
And in the act of creation, you are doing a performance, even if an audience isn't there. And I believe you also did some miming in your time, didn't you?
I was a very bad mime, and I could prove it.
Okay. Well, you can show the audience. As you can see, she's...
Actually, my mother took me to see Marcel Marceau when he came up to Alaska in 1987. And she had a big conference that she had to go to, but after the performance, I thought we were going to just go, and she said, this might be your only chance to meet Marcel Marceau. She missed her plane, so she would give me the chance to see him and shake his hand after a performance. And that was just the most wonderful thing.
And what did he say?
Well, he was very tired, and so he was just nodding his head, and it's like, I said I was Kelly, and he was like, Marcel.
Oh, I see. So he did talk to you. He didn't just offer the white glove.
Yeah.
Okay, excellent. So with Kelly, as you can see, we're on a, kind of a vegetable soup of art expression. Almost anything that goes into her head comes out as art. That's pretty exciting. So I think you're going to find that she will be one of the classes that will be a great deal of fun at the Mockitons Festival. Now, you're slated for the 6th. You'll be...
Yes.
Your class will be on the 6th.
How many days is it this year?
I don't know. I think it covers 4 days or 3 days, but...
Okay, I'm pretty sure I'll be there on Saturday.
Yeah. Well, I can actually find out because one of the things I brought with me today, because it's going to be a constant theme for the next few weeks, and in fact, next week will be Felicia Desimini, who is the professor of art there at the Mat-Su College, will be our guest, maybe our sole guest, for next Thursday. So just a little idea of what is going on there. It's a two-day workshop, Friday and Saturday, the 5th and 6th of June. We have incredible people like Carl Abkin, one of the best portrait painters in the country. We'll be doing a two-day piece. In fact, I'm actually even going to a couple of these. I'm going to go to Liz Barton, who's the daughter of John Barton, who I believe is one of your teachers, isn't
he?
Yes. Yeah, a fabulous person. And what I hear from his daughter is just as amazing as he is, maybe even more so. She'll be doing a sound lab where you basically construct music and musical instruments from found objects, sort of the Man Ray Dadaist of music, a very accomplished musician. I'm also going to be doing going to one of the poetry classes with Julie LeMay, a pretty well-known person here in Palmer. And there's Kelly Colson. You're doing image making dyed eggs, and you do that from 9 to 11:45 on Saturday. So that's
and that should also go into the afternoon, right? There's another one for the afternoon.
I don't know. No, it doesn't say that.
Oh, okay.
But you'll have to work that out. That's 3 hours is a pretty good class, having taken them before. So there you have it. So now, we're going to invite Mike the engineer to join in because he said he could do that. I bet you have some questions for you. I don't know how well Mike knows you. Does Mike know you at all?
I know
We've
her.
We've said hello to each other.
No, more than that. I've known her for a number of years, way back in the day when Radio Free Palmer began, in fact. She came by and took a look at what we were doing. What I'd like to do is shift the focus a little bit to an aspect of art that I don't think we've looked at recently, and that is we talk about art being created, and I know, Greg, you have a fairly significant experience with how art is displayed. I mean, obviously, here on the radio, what we're doing is adding another venue for people, particularly with spoken word, with poetry readings of that sort, to display, to make available the art. But in Palmer, one of the interesting questions is where does art get to be seen? There's an art gallery or two. There are
put Shane Lamb in there.
Right. And there are budding opportunities to do such things as provide murals, for example. We're not at this point, although we have a few murals, and you've been involved in assisting in having them be displayed, we're not one of those communities that has a significant array of murals.
Well, we don't have a significant array of public art, period. And I don't know. I mean, one of course, the large mural on the side of Mad Matters was something I commissioned from a young lady. And that's, I guess, the point, too, is investment in art. But I'm going to make a little thing here about the radio and what I'm attempting to do with visual artists or sculptural artists like Kelly. And that's allowing or trying to allow people to see inside these artists and see their art in an emotional way that you won't even see if you see their art. The artist is something that comes from the inside and goes out. I think Kelly expressed it as some kind of insanity, but I don't think that's really the case. I think it's really a spirit that you're born with and where you go from there. So, yeah, where do we see art in Palmer, in public art? And not just public art in the fact that the city itself only has Balto, as far as I know, but the any other public art other than the couple of murals down at Mad Matter. And we also, we have a city that has almost no graffiti. And this is, I think this is a sad thing. I find graffiti an interesting expression, and some see it as vandalism, but even vandalism can be a form of expression. And usually it's not vandalism in a true sense. I remember Mino in Anchorage, which I wrote about extensively, and the young man went and tagged buildings that really needed help. So was he actually performing a public service, or was he, his work didn't hurt anyone. Right. Interesting point.
So maybe since we're getting close to being finished here, we have about 1 minute left in the show, but it would be interesting to, in my mind, to do a walkabout, whether it was a literal or figurative walkabout Palmer, in terms of identifying what does perhaps escape our attention as art that's there, or even think about potential locations that art could appear and have an effect. Just an idea.
It's a good idea, and I think we should plan on that. And
who's in charge of the art depot? The train depot across the street.
Excuse me, what about
the
it?
The train depot, that would be, I'm sorry, that would, I should have talked to you afterwards. That would be a good place for art as well. Never mind.
Anywhere in town would be a great place. And now I'm going to have to say goodnight to everyone and thank Kelly especially for the interesting conversation. And Mike Molesky for joining us in this. Maggie Avi for her short but sweet talk on the things she's up to. And there are many. And don't forget, percussiveness is an art form, very, very old art form. And Ruth Moore for an interesting piece of Alaskana. Very interesting. Thank you all. Good night.